I'm in heat, I'm in love, but I just couldn't tell her so. Welcome to Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by John Mariano. John, how are you tonight?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, you look good.
Yeah, like lukewarm.
Lukewarm? Well, I know a guy who's going to be better than lukewarm, and that's Scott Haskins. Scott, how's it going?
Doing great, guys. Nice to be back for another Aerosmith song with you.
That's right. This is episode 46. Last week we covered Sheila from Done With Mirrors. We got some cool songs on the dive. But before that, John, maybe you should tell the folks about Pop Rocket Radio.
You mean Ken Knapsack's Pop Rocket Radio?
Yes.
Big hits, album cuts, the B-sides from the rock and pop world that make up the soundtrack of our lives. Look for live shows, make requests, sing, dance, and celebrate the music with the Pop Rocket Radio community. Ken's also been doing a lot of Twitch on his Twitch channel, so I know we plug this a lot, but he recently got me into a little game called Fortnite.
Oh.
And my nephew informed me that the old men are about 5 years too late on this game, but we are playing the hell out of it anyway, and it is a blast.
Is it? My 10-year-old plays that currently. She loves it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. We finished in first place, like, 5 out of 7 games so far. Ken's talking about us going pro.
Now, how do you finish? What is this game? Isn't this like Lego blocks and you're building like cities and shit?
No, that's what I thought too. But there's also a you know, we used to play the Red Dead Redemption, and I was kind of how would you describe me playing that game, Corey?
A fucking monster.
Okay,
you destroyed everything and everyone that crossed your path.
So with that in mind, and Ken is stealth and precision, right? So that you can team up with people, and it's basically Hunger Games, where you get thrown into an arena and it is a battle royal with like 50 or 100 people, and Ken and I have finished first 5 out of 7 games, because you know, he's lightning and I'm thunder, or I'm thunder and he's lightning, however that works. You know, I just create a shit sandwich and then Ken covers me.
Nice. So you're playing video games all day. Scott, you're writing books. You just released a book trilogy not that long ago, didn't you?
I did, yeah. The first book came out in November, just before Thanksgiving. The second one in December, just after Christmas. And then the third one comes out at the end of January. It's called The Universal Court, and I've been working on this for about 13 years, so I'm glad it's done and out there finally.
And where can the fine folks find this book out here?
Amazon. It's on Kindle and available for print, and if anyone would like an autographed copy, I've got a link on the website where I have also added a page for our Aerosmith podcast right here.
Which is fantastic. Thank you. And I got to hit that website, because I know both John and I have been angling to get some autographed copies here. So.
And oh, nice. Well, I've saved some for you.
Oh, thank you.
If I wanted to purchase this book for a friend of the family, something like, I'll purchase it to read it myself because I know you personally. But if I'm purchasing it for somebody, what is the back cover read like, so that way anybody listening to this might, who has an interest in this, might pick it up?
Well, that is a great question, and I can pull that up and tell you, because believe it or not, I do not have that memorized.
He has the deep dive stuff memorized, which we're going to get to in a moment, but his own book, he can't even talk about.
Well, I wrote that a while ago, so, you know, it gets kind of fuzzy. Actually, that was one of the hardest parts of the process, was writing that, what I wanted the back of the books to say, because you want to say enough to get people interested to read it, but not enough to give anything away, where when they get to it, they're like, oh, I knew that was going to happen, or have any kind of a spoiler alert. And by the time you get to the description for book three, it's really difficult to, but you figure people that are looking at book three have probably read at least one, if not one and two. So you could say a little bit, but you still don't want to, you know, have any spoiler alerts out there. So basically, it's called The Universal Court. In book one, both Michelle and Philip Hicks had no idea their divorce would become a landmark case. With the law of attraction dividing the nation, the U.S. government has decided the debate once and for all must be settled, and judging this divorce case will set a whole new set of rules. They have to basically do it by the law of attraction instead of man's law. So this is kind of an interesting take on the court system. Overnight, Michelle and Philip and their daughter are thrust into the nation's attention, and not all of it is good. While their attorneys are certain that they can win their case, each of them, of course, Michelle and Philip are not, as they are forced to deep dive within themselves for answers. Little do they know, the very courthouse the trial is set to take place in possesses a threat to them and everyone else in the building. Then a mysterious man appears from out of town. Who is he, and why does he mean them harm? Will he succeed in bringing the case to a halt, no matter how many lives he has to take to do it? And that is book one.
Well, that's obviously John Mariano. You wrote about John in your book. I find that fascinating.
It is a legal, like, it feels like it's a legal romance story to a degree, because you have the husband and wife, or ex-husband and ex-wife, trying to get this divorce, and they have this law of attraction they've got to kind of combat, and then you have this dark, mysterious man. I got a problem with these dark, mysterious men. Like, what the hell are you doing hanging out in so many alleyways? And your guy's probably not hanging out in an alleyway, but at some point, to become dark and mysterious, the origin story we know is you go down a dark alleyway.
I find it difficult to meet people in the light, so it leaves me little option.
I mean, that's how I eat my food. That's why I eat Taco Bell.
Well, it's really categorized as a legal thriller, because it's based on, you know, the case is the major part of the book, but it's really about, you know, the law of attraction has gotten to the point where it's kind of cracking society in half. There's people that live, you know, every inch by it, and there's people that think it's the new snake oil and they're complete at odds. But it's also, you know, you've got the family story about, you know, this family that's going through the divorce, what happens with their daughter and her being caught in the middle. So it's got a lot of angles. But what really turned it into much more of a, like, a spy thriller feel was the one day I spent on the set of the movie Jason Bourne. And I was there for about 16 hours shooting with them. And after that, it just kind of took off into the, well, what if the government did this? And what if this happened? And what if that happened, that I don't think would have come into the story had I not done that for one day out of my life?
I mean, you definitely have sold me, especially like everything you've described, I'm into. And then you mentioned that you were on the set of Jason Bourne, who we all know is played by Matt Damon, who mm-hmm. was the Rainmaker, and, you know, the Grisham novels, and you're doing legal. Like, there is all kinds of, like, good pedigree going on here.
Thank you. It's an interesting ride. And from what my editor told me, it's a fast read.
Awesome. Well, now, I'm going to go out on a limb, and without tipping your hand too much, just tell me how accurate I am. I think the entire third act of book three is going to take place at a Uriah Heep concert. Would that be accurate?
No, I should have written that in. I actually finished writing the book years ago. It's been caught up in editing and all that. So it was well before I started doing Uriah Heep, the Magician's podcast. But I should have had them go to a concert at some point while the world was in danger.
Well, that would have been great. And now, John, you can tell us about your book, the coffee table book, 100 Women I'd Like to Pork.
No,
did you
narrow
it down to 100?
Sorry, we were talking. Throw Mama from the Train on the call.
I do have to correct you. And we were talking Throw Mama from the Train. But if I were writing a book with a title like that, it would be called 100 Porks I'd Like to Eat.
Well, in all fairness, the night was moist.
And sultry.
And sultry.
But before we go any further, here's a really awkward segue. Let's go from moist and sultry pork to the Deep Dive Podcast Network. Scott Haskett, maybe tell the folks about our brother and sister shows on the network here.
Well, I actually think that was a great one deep dive to another segue, Corey. We've got a ton of great shows in the network. Really happy to be a part of it. We've got T-Bones Prime Cuts on the other side. We've got Deep Purple Podcast, Skinnerd Reconsidered, Sabbath Bloody Podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, which is a podcast all about the band Queen. We have Hawk Binge, Maiden A to Z Pod, Diary of the Madmen, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, Judas Priest Cast, and our own Corey is a co-host along with our friend Mark Kameyer at And the Podcast Will Rock. We've got our buddies John and Corey right here with us on Backtracks Theme Music, going over songs from films that are just amazing. We've got North by South. We have So Far, So Pod, So What, a Megadeth podcast. Our good buddy Kevin, which although this will air a little bit later, Corey was a guest on Kevin's show, The Tom Petty Project. And we have Quinn at End Volume for All. And lastly, we have Sav, Nick, John, and Mark at Rock Roulette Podcast. Lots of good shows.
Lots of fantastic shows. And John, this is going to air a couple of months after the fact, but I want to throw a plug. A couple months back to Thanksgiving, you and I did a theme music with a friend of yours and a little song from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Let's throw a little plug for that one because I thought that was a great show.
Yeah, like if you get a chance, go back and listen to it. My friend Lisa Molina, she's a dear old friend of mine, and Corey was kind enough to indulge me and bring a guest on Sight and Scene, and Lisa completely killed it. She's former Broadway actress and, you know, has many, many talents, but we didn't really talk about that much. We focused completely on this love of this Thanksgiving movie about empathy, and go back and give it a listen because the whole world could use a lot more empathy.
Absolutely. One of our favorite movies. And I love just Lisa just out of the blue would just start dropping names like, oh yeah, me and Marty worked together, you know, on stage. And oh yeah, then Steve Martin came by one night and it's like, oh, let me help you pick up that name you just dropped. Like just, oh yeah, I met Steve. No big deal.
I love talking to people in the industry when those kind of things happen. You know, when I was interviewing one guy, he was telling me, oh yeah, so-and-so came by and then I was working with this person. Oh yeah, I worked with Al Pacino on a project. I'm like, it's just so casual. I'm like, yeah. It's Al Pacino.
Scott, I had Lisa act in a movie that the only movie I've ever written. I co-wrote and produced the movie. And Lisa acts in this movie. And 20 years after the fact, I find out she used to hang out with Natalie Portman. Oh, and like as they were both coming up, and Natalie goes on to have Natalie's career. Lisa, in her own right, acts on Broadway with Bernadette Peters and Martin Short. So like, that's nothing to snuff your nose at either.
Yeah.
Right. Like they both did very well in their careers. And then, like, hey, here I am, and I'm like this show up. I'm like, I wrote like a dick and fart joke comedy, and would you like to act in it for free? And I'll pay you in meatballs.
Your actual food?
No, actual food. Like I cooked an Italian like 5-course meal, and fed people over the course of 2 weeks, and paid them in food because we didn't have enough money in our budget to actually pay people. And, you know, room, board, and food is what we offered. And we got it shot, but we learned a very, very valuable lesson. The importance of a sound guy, which is, a luxury we didn't have or didn't know about as we got into it. And
it can easily make or break your film.
Oh, it broke it. Corey got to witness some of it. It's broken.
Yeah, I can attest to that. John gave me the file and said, hey, can we clean this up? And I'm like, wow, I don't know.
I've worked on films where we've basically had to ADR the entire film. It's a process. You have to decide if the film's worth enough of the effort it would take to make it work.
See, I think we should ADR it, but just us three, and we'll get Lisa too to do all the girl parts, but we'll just the four of us just ADR it.
There you go.
I wanted to do it as a silent movie with cards.
Oh, that works too. Hmm.
Yeah. So we'll figure it out.
You just need a good score.
And I need to say, in fairness to John, if he's paying you in food, you're getting paid extremely well. This man can cook. I've never had it, but I've seen the pictures, and this son of a bitch makes me hungry every single time he sends me a picture of what he's grilling. It's terrible.
Do you know what the secret is, Scott?
What's that?
I cook very photogenic food.
Could you shoot like pictures for fast food restaurants the way that they make the fries just look perfect every time?
No, because I don't cook French fries, so that doesn't make any sense.
I still think it would have been funnier if you would have just handed her a copy of the movie Meatballs on VHS or maybe Laserdisc.
Laserdisc, now we're talking. There's a reference only three of us will get.
Yeah, that's right.
Remember Laserdiscs?
I gotta go listen to my 8-track after we get off of this thing.
Do you have an Aerosmith 8-track by any chance? Because we're talking Aerosmith, we're talking mixtapes, and John, the show that's dropping this week is the one where you kind of throw things into chaos with your new idea for the mixtape. Maybe just real quick, we'll talk about what we're doing on this show. It's been a while. Maybe explain to the folks what we're doing with side A and side B of the mixtape, and what the heck this all-time top 10 is all about.
All right. Well, first of all, I guess I'll start with the all-time top 10. Corey and I were looking at the mixtape and worried that it was going to become an all-time, like, top 18 or top 20 or whatever. And we're like, you know what? There's no fun in that. So let's try to find a way to cancel those things off of the mixtape as quickly as possible. So we came up with an all-time top 10, which is basically anything that was released as a single gets thrown into the mix there, and that's how you're eligible for that list. But you're not eligible for side A at all. Side A is anything that does not fit in that was released as a single. It could be a B-side, it could be a deep cut, but you know, it's something that you're going to use to introduce people to the band. Side B are live tracks, because for one of the greatest live bands of all time, we needed a way to celebrate their live music. So side A, deep cuts and B-sides. Side B, live music, and all-time top 10, just our 10 favorite Aerosmith songs.
That's right, and all three are looking pretty good. We got 10 tracks on the all-time top 10. A lot of them I don't see making the final mix, but we got a couple of singles on the dice tonight. We'll see if maybe we can replace something. Side A, we have nine tracks going on the mixtape. So if we roll a deep cut tonight and we want to put it on there, we're going to have to take something off. That's always an interesting conversation. And on the live side, we have 6 tracks currently, so we have 3 open spots. And we currently have 1 live track on the dice. I'll recap those selections here for you tonight. First up, we got Devil's Got a New Disguise. That was one of the new tracks from one of their many, many, many compilation albums from not that long ago. You See Me Crying from Toys in the Attic. Dream On, live from Live Bootleg. Pink from 9 Lives, that's been on there forever, I think, since we started this show almost. It's been there so long. Reefer-Headed Woman from Night in the Ruts. And I'm Down, a Scott Haskin favorite from Permanent Vacation. Scott, let's start with you. What are you in the mood to listen to here tonight?
Oh, man. You know, it's been a crazy busy week, and I want to be exposed to something I haven't heard before. So I would say one of not my picks.
Okay. So that's what, 4? Because you picked what? You picked You See Me Crying and I'm Down, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So anything other than those two? John, how about you?
So kind of like Scott, I want to be exposed to something I haven't been exposed to before. I'm pretty sure Pink is about a vulva. So let's go with Pink.
All right. John's horny tonight. He's picking Pink. I'm going to go for a little Reefer-Headed Woman for kind of the same reason. What do you say? Let's roll this son of a bitch. Let's see what we get. And we're coming up. Pink, there you go, Johnny. You got your pick. You got to be happy about this one. Finally, we can take this one off the die. I know a lot of people are like, Jesus, just hurry up and do Pink already. Tonight's the night. John, tell us about your experience with Pink and with 9 Lives.
Yeah, I mean, 9 Lives to me was kind of like, let's see what they have left in the tank. And in hearing songs like Pink and some of the songs that were released off of 9 Lives, it definitely felt like a bit of a downturn coming off of Get a Grip and the albums before it. It's not a bad album. But for this to be one of the biggest hits off of that album, I think I'm pretty happy we're getting it off the dice tonight.
Well, and this was a single, so this is going to be eligible for the all-time Aerosmith top 10. So this is going to be interesting, because I know there's some tracks on there that John in particular is not really a fan of. So
do we have 10 is really what my question is.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yes, we do.
Oh, so we may have like a. Does this barely make the top 10? And what barely comes off the top 10?
Well, let's recap what's on the top 10, just so the folks know. Let the Music Do the Talking, Chip Away the Stone, The Other Side, Janie's Got a Gun, which Scott was ready to boot off last week, Crazy, Eat the Rich, Mamakin, Shut Up and Dance, all the way back from episode 2 with Shut Up and Dance, Helter Skelter, and Hangman Jury. So Pink is competing with those tonight. Scott, I'm assuming this is a new listen for you here tonight?
Brand new listen. And I'm really excited because what the audience couldn't see was on the screen, there was an advertisement for some video games along the bottom in the advertisement block. And there was sort of a creepy creature that was just making a face that was, you know, kind of haunting. And when Corey announced the song, John made the same face, only a polar opposite happy version of it. So I know that we're in for something good. That's a good omen.
Oh yeah, pink is his new obsession. Pink, it's not even a question. You're going to get some kind of lazy lyrics in this one. What do you say, boys? Are you ready for a little Pink from 1997's Nine Lives? Here we go. I love the vibe of this song. Like, it's just got a laid back groove. I love what Tom Hamilton's doing on the bass. To me, the bass really shone there on the intro. And of course, you got Steven doing some kick ass harmonica. I really dug the beginning of this track. Scott, how about you?
Yeah, it really just has a great feel to it. I love the way that the snare drum is just kicking through and smacking me in the chest. I'm trying to decide, though. It feels almost more like a modern country song, you know, the way that pop has kind of crossed over into country, maybe a little bit slower version of something Shania Twain would have done. Maybe it's the harmonica in part, but the bass is really cutting through and sounds amazing.
And that snare had a very distinctive sound, didn't it? It almost, like, I don't want to say out of tune, but it was definitely kind of, it was tuned down a little bit. It wasn't that nice whip crack snare that you usually get.
Yeah, it's got a good bottom end to it for sure. I don't know if maybe they could have added a little bit of EQ to it, or maybe it's a deeper snare, like an 8.5 instead of a 6.
Now, John, I know you love you some harmonica. So, Steven Tyler, what did you think about that?
You know, it's fine. It's kind of what I'm going to say. And I say that going, I really dug it the way that you're digging it the first time out listening to it. But now it's almost, I'm anticipating the lyrics are about to come. And it's okay, when I hear this song now, it's about getting it over. And as great as this intro is, it draws out what follows and sets the pacing and tone for what follows. I'm not going to be a fan of this song, guys. Like, I just, it's... like Corey kind of alluded to me, it's very lazy Aerosmith. I know it's laid back. You know, Scott was saying like, it's like modern country, all of that, but it's also just not great.
Well, and Steven would kind of morph into modern country when he went on his solo trek there, right? That was more country. This is the songwriters are Steven Tyler, Richie Supa, of course, from the Rock and the Hard Place era, and Glenn Ballard. So you can kind of see why it maybe would have that kind of new country kind of slant to it. Let's get to those lyrics that John loves so much.
Pink, it's my new obsession. Yeah, pink, it's not even a question. Pink on the lips of your lover. Cause pink is the love you discover.
So, like, you can make many great analogies for the vagina, right? But there's nothing more obvious than just using the color pink. And then in your opening lyrics, talking about the lips of your lover, as if you weren't sure what this song was going to be about.
Well, and even if you weren't sure, they put in, there's a woman in the background going, ooh, when he said the, you know, pink on the lips of your lover. Ooh. So just in case you didn't get the imagery from that line, they threw in a little thing there for you.
Scott, what do you think about Aerosmith for dumb people?
I think this would be you know, Anatomy for Dummies if it were a song. What I don't like is I feel in Steven's delivery, I feel like he doesn't even like the lyrics. I mean, he's just kind of like saying them and not putting any emotion or passion into it. He's like, this is my new obsession, but he's saying it like he's talking about a piece of wood. And the lyrics are definitely lazy, but if you're going to throw in like oohs and ahs and stuff, you have to feel those things. And I feel like he's just so used to saying words in between his lines that he just threw that in without having anything behind it.
You know, he delivers that line like Tex and Edna Boyle's Oregon Emporium from SCTV. John, I know you remember that one. Dave Thomas played Tex, and I'm blanking on her name. Andrew Martin. I was Edna. Yeah. Come on down to Tex and Edna's Oregon Emporium. We got lots of That's how he's delivering this song. And I couldn't agree more with you guys.
It's a very deadpan delivery. It's very lazy, dry writing. It's almost like a bad Aerosmith parody right now.
Yeah, Aerosmith for Dummies. I thought that was a good point there, John.
I feel like he's just like laying on his pillow and just casually writing these lyrics in his mind, and that's just how he's singing them.
Yep. Yep. I follow you.
Pink as the thing on your cherry. Pink, 'cause you are so very. Pink, it's the color of passion. 'Cause today it just goes with the fashion.
So he's saying pink and starting every line with pink. And then we get to the end of this verse, and it is the worst version of mouth vomit you could possibly follow it up with. It's like the words don't even fit what's going on there. It's I'm going to squeeze these words in here as quickly as I can to get to the next part. It's like, Scott, what do you call that in music?
I don't think there needs to be a term for that. I think, you know, it's almost like they said, hey, let's throw in a couple of lines like the Beatles would have done on Magical Mystery Tour. Let's try to do something like that, even though we can't. And we're going to put it in anyway. And I think what bothers me, too, is this reads like a Hallmark card, doesn't it?
Yeah. What bothers me is Steven Tyler wrote Dream On when he was 13 years old. He wrote this when he was 50 something years old. And it feels like those should be reversed.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. I will say, I feel the need to be a little positive here on one thing. I thought his vocal delivery on the last two lines was really good. And I think everything is going to be all right no matter what we do tonight. I thought that was a really cool melody that he did on that.
Corey, but you have to say that in about half the time you just did and try to fit it into the music. And it's a puzzle that does not fit. Like, I get what you're saying about the delivery, but this is literally a square peg going into a round hole right now.
Well, I thought the same thing by the time they get to No Matter What We Do Tonight. I thought that delivery was the first line where I finally felt like he meant what he was singing about. And, you know, I talk to vocalists sometimes, and I talk to them about the difference between singing the lines and making me feel the story, right? And that was the first line where I was like, okay, he really is passionate about this thing that he's claiming he's been passionate about this whole time. So that was where the song at least started to get interesting, but it shouldn't take until line 8 to get there.
Especially when you're singing about pussy.
Well, yeah.
You could be my flamingo. 'Cause pink, it's a new kind of lingo. Pink.
Pink like a deco umbrella. I never understood that line. Can anyone enlighten me?
No.
Yeah. I mean, are you familiar with Art Deco?
In a way, yeah. Well,
yeah. Well, I guess there's a pink Art Deco. Pink? Yeah. I don't really think of pink when I think of Art Deco.
No, that's what I was getting at.
Just like pink is like Art Deco is usually golds and blacks and whites and like very stark colors. Right, and very chic, like almost gaudy colors, and pink is not one of them. Like this is just kind of like I'm going to put the word that fits there. Like, if Kmart fit there, he would have put Kmart in there just because it rhymed.
This feels to me like the engineer said, guys, I just realized we're one track short from the album and I've got to send these tapes off FedEx in 4 hours. So let's hurry up and write something and get it recorded.
Yeah. And Joe Perry's like, well, I got this half, beaten riff, ding, 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 on a jangly guitar, and they just kind of rolled with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the middle of the guitar solo, John is stomping me.
You know I'm not loving the song when I'm stomping on the guitar solo. But I just want to point out, like, this feels like a paint-by-numbers Aerosmith in all the wrong ways, like, including getting to this guitar solo and what's going on in this guitar solo right now. It's like Steven Tyler's lyrics just hung a little bit too long into the solo, and it just, like... It just feels like it's trying to hit all the notes of an Aerosmith song without actually being an Aerosmith song.
Is that the same guitar tone he was using on the solo for What It Takes?
Yes, I was going to say that. It sounds very much like What It Takes. And I would love to hear more of it, but I can't because Steven is codwobbling all over it with just, that's all I hear is Steven. Yeah, I want to hear me some Joe Perry playing that guitar.
Yeah, and he had the whole rest of the song to say everything he wanted to say.
And he's not saying anything. Right. He's ruining the only part of the song I was really kind of excited about.
I want to be your lover. Did you guys get enough of the guitar solo there and see why I stomp on it?
Was there a guitar?
You kind of heard it whenever Steven stopped to take a breath. You're like, oh, that sounds good. And then, oh, yeah. It's like, shut up. I want to hear the guitar.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say, when I thought it was ending there, I thought, okay. And then he started up again. And I thought, why is there more? Like, you could have gotten out of it and been done right there. But let's find some more cliche things to say and... let's find something else to rhyme with "ite."
And I just want to, sorry, we're all talking over each other, and that's what happens when Aerosmith talks over each other. But I just want to say really quick, it's okay if Corey starts playing and Scott starts talking over the song, because Steven's talking over the song.
That's my influence.
I want to be your lover. I want to wrap you in rubber, as pink as the sheets that we lay on, 'cause pink is my favorite crayon.
There you go. I want to be your lover. I want to wrap you in rubber, as pink as the sheets that we lay on. Pink, it's my favorite crayon.
I can't keep doing this show. Like that, I am so disappointed on so many levels. That has got to be some of the worst lyrics I've ever read. And coming from Steven Tyler, that's a huge disappointment.
This was a single, yeah. Scott.
Well, I blame everyone on the planet for this. I don't know what it would have been that the record company would have seen in this. I what's really sad is I think it had potential. Like musically, it's got a good backing. I think if there was something better vocally happening, but come on, I want to be your lover. I want to wrap you in rubber. What the fuck are you talking about? It just makes no sense. None.
I just got a question. Like when you have colors like burnt sienna and raw sienna, right? And you got all these great colors in the Crayola box. Who the fuck is going to pink going, that's my favorite color? It barely shows up on a white piece of paper when you're trying to color something in.
Burnt sienna was actually my favorite crayon.
There you go. Yeah, unless you're an 8-year-old girl, you're not giving a shit about Pink. I hear you.
Yeah.
Now, this song charted in the Billboard Hot 100. Let's see who can get closest to the correct number without going over Price is Right style. John Mariano, let's start with you. How high did Pink chart in 1997?
Seven.
All right. John saying top 10. Scott?
I'm going to say 14.
14.
And I'm sad that I'm picking a number that low.
Well, guess what? You are closest. It was 27.
Wow. I don't necessarily think that chart is a reflection of the quality of the song. I think Aerosmith comes out with a new single, people go and buy it because it's Aerosmith or because they're collectors or whatever. I don't necessarily think that means they liked the song.
No, and that's why I went as high as seven, because it was coming off of some pretty big stuff going into this album.
Mm-hmm.
And Pink being a ballad, and the three ballads off of the last album were gangbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is what, like the third or fourth single off of Nine Lives? This is the third. Nine Lives didn't do that well. I think it only hit like double platinum, if I remember correctly. Let me just look at it here. Yeah, double platinum. Hole in My Soul didn't really chart. Falling in Love Is Hard on the Knees was the big opening single for that one. And then the third one is Pink. So Aerosmith wasn't really hot in 1997.
Okay, but it charted and it was the third single, so it's not like people weren't exposed to the song. I would love to understand what people saw in this, because I'm just not seeing it.
It was a pretty cool video that had a lot of the heads of the band members were on different bodies. I think Joey's head was on like a goat or something. It had a very cool video anyway, so maybe that did had something to do with it.
Well, maybe I'll watch it on mute.
I will say I like that line. I know John's going to make fun of it. I like the line, Pink, it's like red, but not quite. I always kind of done that.
As the joke. No. As the only member of this panel who has aced a color theory class in art school, like, it's literally red with white paint mixed together, make pink. So it's like red, but not quite. Come on, Steve. Just try harder.
I just want to know.
I enjoyed it.
In the writing sessions, did they each have a thesaurus, or was it just Steven?
I'm going to guess just Steven.
Yeah. What's great is like he could have had the word thesaurus and rhymed it with clitoris, and that would have been the most clever lyric of the song.
Holy shit, don't give me any ideas. That'll be on the next Aerosmith album.
Hashtag missed opportunities.
I want to read your thesaurus. I want to play with your clitoris. Yeah, it fits. And I think everything is going to be alright, no matter what we do tonight. All right, that's Pink from 1997's Nine Lives, guys. All right, it's time to play my new favorite game on the show. How many times has Aerosmith played Pink? Scott, because we started with John on the impromptu version earlier, it's up to you now. Give us a number closest to the actual number without going over. How many times do you think Aerosmith has played Pink in concert?
Man, considering where it charted, I'd have to think that they did it a fair number of times. But if this album wasn't that popular, maybe not. I'm going to say 57.
57 from Scott Haskin. John Mariano, are you going higher? Are you going lower? What are you thinking? What's your number?
Scott took my number. So I'm going to go with 58.
Oh, I love it. The jerk Price is Right strategy.
Price is Right rules.
I love it. Guess what? You are so far away from the actual number. John Mariano technically wins. The correct number is 486 times.
What?
Yep,
he actually seriously sang those words in front of people over 400 times. That's scary.
They sang it 8 times in 2020 alone.
I would be embarrassed to sing this song in the shower.
You know what? As of right now, I don't think they've done it on the residency. I know they're getting ready to do another set of dates in Las Vegas at the residency. Maybe they'll bust it out, but let's see. The latest they did this, I think, was, well, 2020, they did it 8 times. And then 2019, they did another 6 times. So just now and then, they kind of bust it out. The big one, of course, was 97, 98, 92 times on the Nine Lives Tour, and then 85 times the year following. So the big question, though, guys, is Pink is now eligible for the all-time top 10. So did you guys like it enough to replace something on the top 10 with Pink? Let's start with, well, I'm pretty sure I know how John's going to vote. So let's start with Scott.
Despite everything I've said about this song, I did not like it enough. I thought I was kind of subtle about my feelings. I did not like it enough to say it would beat anything on the all-time top 10 for me.
All right, John.
I would rather listen to a horned toad fart than listen to that song again.
All right, that's 0-2. My vote doesn't really matter, but just for the sake of art, I would have also voted no. I wouldn't take anything off the all-time top 10 for Pink. So that is now off the die. Now it's my turn to pick a new one because I believe I put it on there. And I'm going to go with a track that one of Aerosmith's biggest fans that follows our show, a fellow by the name of Michael Green, asked us to put on the die a long, long time ago. And John and I kind of took a hiatus. We kind of forgot about it. It kind of fell between the cracks. It's now my time to put a song on there. I'm going to put his song on there. Thank you very much for listening, Michael Green. We really appreciate your support. And I'm adding Magic Touch from Permanent Vacation to the die.
Good song. And to add some lyrics to the new Aerosmith song that John was writing earlier, we'll have to add the line, "I want to be your Stegosaurus."
Oh, there you go.
Because it just fits with the way that we're doing the song tonight.
What else?
Our verse is way better than the rest of that song.
Okay, we need one more then. We got the Thoris, Clitoris, and Stegosaurus. What else do we got? You need 4 lines at least for a verse, right?
No, you could do 3, and then you could do a bridge line into the chorus.
Okay, what's the bridge line?
Oh, no, wait. No, before you get there, Steven can say something like, "Don't be a Boris," because he does stuff that doesn't make sense, and he can just throw a random name in there like Boris. Like, don't be a Boris. Right?
You're going to really hate this chorus.
Yeah.
I want to be your Stegosaurus.
Or just, yeah, da, 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 da.
Do it, John. John does the best.
A giddy, giddy gal.
Yeah, that was pretty good. You were like Steven. You're pretty laid back. You didn't give it your all this time.
I just felt I should match his energy.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. So Pink, kind of a dud for us here on the panel tonight, but let us know. Maybe we're out to lunch. Maybe you're a big fan of Pink. Hit us up on Twitter, at BT Aerosmith. I was assuming Twitter is still a thing. We're 2 months into the future here. All we know, Twitter.
You can find us on Hive if it ever loads.
I know, I kind of follow John over to Hive, and yeah, I'm having a hard time just following somebody or, you know, doing anything, but hey, could be cool. I don't know.
I will say when I logged into Twitter to announce the newest version of my other podcast, I saw a tweet from Elon Musk that just had a black pirate flag and no explanation. Ooh. And I thought, I have no idea what this means. Maybe we'll be here tomorrow. Maybe we won't, but there's no way to tell.
It doesn't seem like a good sign.
It doesn't.
I disagree. Like, I would be concerned if it were a different color pirate flag, but the fact that you specified it was a black pirate flag, at least it was the right color.
It's true.
Like, pirate flags should only be black because it looks weird if they you just pick a random color. Like a teal pirate flag would feel off brand for me.
But what if pink was your favorite crayon?
There you go.
I'm a Rossiana guy.
All right, let's put a bow on this one. John Mariano, what do you got coming up? Where the folks find you online? All that kind of good stuff.
Oh, you know, I would say you can find me on the Twitter, but I'm not sure what is going on Twitter right now. So you can just find me on this show, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited, and you can find me on another show called Backtracks Theme Music. And that's about it. Those are the only two places I probably exist on the internet in the future right now.
And maybe Hive.
We're assuming Hive is probably going to be gone by the time this show airs. We don't know. Scott Haskin, how about you? I know you got a ton of stuff going on. Let the folks know about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. By the time this comes out, I'll probably be gearing up for two new seasons of Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast, as the new album, Chaos and Colors, drops on January 27th of 2023. Very excited about that. And I'm doing a short warm-up season to kind of get back into the groove of things before I do that one. And then there's the Haskin Cast podcast, of course. And you can find links to everything on my website, including a page for this podcast at www.scotthaskin.com.
We finally have a stable home for this show, John, other than Anchor. We're actually on the Scott Haskin website as well, in case Twitter goes away. That's really our only other social media presence, because I'm only one man and John won't help. Because I'm doing other shows. I'm doing Backtrack Steam Music with John Mariano, and I'm doing And the Podcast Will Rock with an equally lazy Mark Kammeyer, who won't haul any of the weight when it comes to social media. But we're talking all things Van Halen, and we're doing live shows. This is probably going to air after the fact, but we're planning a big deep dive December live show, hopefully featuring one Scott Haskin above us here, and some other friends from the Deep Dive Podcasting Network. So if that happens, and if you missed it, go back on YouTube and check it out. I'm sure it's going to be a blast. We've got a lot of fine folks on the podcast feed here, and I recommend you check them all out. They do fantastic work. But until next week, on behalf of John Mariano and Scott Haskin, my name is Corey Marcet. Thank you very much for listening here this week. And as always, we'll give the final word to Steven Tyler.